Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There was a bin on the left-hand side of that picture, right, that we dressed up like R2-D2. Star Wars. And there was, anyway, it's a running joke in the dressing room. It's probably not going to make anything any sense here whatsoever, but he followed us everywhere, this bin. We made a bin everywhere we went in every game.
You're listening to the Lord's Cricket Podcast with me, Will Rowe. These are the stories from the home of cricket with the people that made them. My guest on today's show is a cricketer who wore his heart on his sleeve, enjoying a first-class career spanning 167 matches across 13 seasons, taking 572 first-class wickets at 28.74 apiece. Having started as a trainee at Leicestershire before being let go, he played for Yorkshire, Gloucestershire and Somerset, as well as featuring for England Lions. Not without setbacks, his story is one of overcoming adversity, and he's enjoyed some real highs and lows at the great old grounds of Lords. Steve Kirby, welcome to the Lords Cricket Podcast. How are you?
Oh, I'm great, thanks, Will. It's brilliant to be here and looking forward to sharing some of these stories with you. Yeah,
going down memory lane.
Absolutely, can't wait.
Right, let's clear something up first.
Yeah.
What did you say to Michael Atherton?
Oh no, I knew you were going to ask me that straight away.
Well, there's so many different, you know, did you say to him, I've seen better batsmen in my fridge?
No, I never said it in the fridge. No, I didn't. No, I didn't. I basically said I've seen better batters in a fish and chip shop.
Right.
Which makes better sense. he actually howled. He laughed his head off. It was done all in good banter, relatively. You know, I've got to make this one point, right? Michael Atherton, it was one of my heroes growing up, and then all of a sudden I'm on the pitch with him and getting a chance to bowl at probably one of the best batters England's ever produced. I thought, I've got to do something here to get him out of his comfort zone somehow, which he did. And I got him out, actually. Nicked him off a couple of times. I think, if I remember rightly, he retired after that, so I must have done him a treat.
So you're saying that you ended Atherton's career?
I think so.
Great stuff. Well, you played for Yorkshire. That was your first county. But you're actually born in Bury in Lancashire.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a bit about your childhood?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, I mean, I used to play for Haywood Cricket Club.
Yeah.
You know, I've got some unbelievable memories from when I could even first remember, to be honest. We used to live at the top of the road there. Haywood Cricket Club used to be called the Crimble. And there was, you know, we used to go down basically from the top of my road straight down into the Queen's Park there. And many, many, many a time, me and the family, my mum, my dad, my brother, that's where we used to live. It was the hub of... The hub, right from when I was 2, 3, 4 years old. Played my first game when I was 7. That was under 13s at 7 years old. I used to play this thing called tip and run.
Yeah.
And all you used to do is hit the ball and just throw the bat in the air and off you go. Because obviously that's what we used to. So I'm all padded up in the middle of this first game under 13s. And first memory is literally, because I never scored many runs, as you know.
No.
So I was quite happy, quite happy when I clattered one. And I was so nervous, I threw the bat about 8 feet in the air. And I've gone up, and I've even gone back, picked my bat up and got back in again. So those were my first sort of memories. But Haywood Cricket Club are a great club.
Yeah.
Still got some smashing friends up there. Bobby Cross is heavily involved there. Kate Cross is now playing for England, or has played for England and has... had a brilliant career there. It's a great club. Used to be part of the Central Lancashire League, and now obviously that's been disbanded. But I remember playing a lot of first team cricket there, playing up against the likes of Ezra Mosley, Kyle Hooper, you know, Gus Logie, Hansi Cronier.
Yeah.
You know, and going up at 13 years old and bowling at people like that really was a baptism of fire, really. And I always remember my first hero at Heywood was a bowler who was 6'9", and it's a guy called Curtly Ambrose.
Oh yeah.
And he was probably one of the biggest sort of role models for me, really, and icons that I wanted to sort of emulate. So yeah, Heywood Cricket Club was where I started, and obviously mum and dad live in Bury, and that's how we have that link there.
Did you play with Curtly Ambrose then?
No, I never played with him. I was only sort of 9 at the time.
Right.
9 or 10. But so I just remember watching him bowl, and he
was he in the first team then?
He was.
And well, I mean, he's not going to be in the seconds, but
no, he was. I mean, he had a hell of a year. He got 115 wickets in a season.
Wow!
And they were the wettest wickets in the world as well. Will. I mean, I don't know how he did it, but I remember one particular game, and it goes down in history now. He was not bowling particularly well, and some scout from Northants came and literally just pulled up onto the ground, pulled up at the end of the ground, and David Fair said to him, you better pull your finger out, because you do realise who that is over there, don't you? And he went and got 9 for, and we never saw him again. No, but he was fantastic to watch. Very quiet, very unassuming, had pants that were half-mast. He never had a pair of pants that fit him. They're the memories that you remember for being at Heywood, really, and I owe them a huge amount, really.
Yeah.
Because without them I wouldn't have been able to have that early grounding in cricket.
Was it always fast bowling then? Obviously you were tip and run, you didn't really fancy batting. Were you always a quick bowler?
Well, to be honest, mate, when you used to go through more helmets than bats, as a batter, I soon worked out that actually probably the bowling was the best thing I needed to go for. No, I loved batting. And I was always sort of seen as a blocker.
Yeah.
I used to get my capabilities and my ambitions mixed up a little bit, to be honest. Used to play a really good shot and think I were Billy Brian Lara or something. So, yeah, anyway. But yeah, no, I mean, as a bowler, I just loved it. And I think one of the things with the bat, you've only got one chance.
Yeah.
With the bowl, you've got 6.
Mm.
And I love that. I love the battle. You know, and we'll talk about that later, I'm sure. But I love the battle of the batsman versus the bowler. And as a bowler, you're the one in control. Because the batter can't do a thing until you let go of it. So, you know, and I liked that element of it. I wanted to be seen as somebody who could make a difference in a cricket match and win for my mates. And with the ball, I felt I could do that. With the bat, I certainly didn't.
And what was it? Were you an academic kid? What was school like? Was it always sport, or did you try hard at school?
I did try hard. I was a very good, not the most intelligent man in the world. I did all right. I got 10 GCSEs, 1 A, a few Bs, quite a few Cs, maybe the odd D and E here and there. But
doing the alphabet, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Now, look, I went to Elton High School, and Elton High School was a school in Walshire, Bury. And it was a school of Gary Neville and Phil Neville.
Yeah.
And I owe Gary quite a lot, actually, and a huge amount, because I used to have a problem where I blacked out. Basically, I'd got hit in a football match. My football skills weren't the best. But some big centre-half have gone up to a header and knocked me out.
Right.
And Gary Neville actually, I swallowed my tongue and he got my tongue out. I always remember him and the head girl. It was a lady called Sarah Wigglesworth, and she was absolutely stunning. I wish it had been her that helped me, but but no, Gary, I owe Gary a lot. And Phil's an exceptional cricketer as well as a footballer.
Yeah.
And it was interesting, he was 2 years older than me, Phil. I might have been a year older than me, and he did really well at 14. I think he got 100 in both innings for Lancashire in a second 11 game. And they offered him a contract, and then Manchester United came in and offered him something a little bit bigger than that. So yeah, as a school, Elton High School was always sporty. As academically, you know, I had to work very hard. I still keep in touch with some of the teachers there now. Neil Parkinson, Phil Young, and Mr. Crawley. You know, they're all people there that have followed my career, and I've kept in touch with them. They came to my wedding. You know, so I've got a lot of good links there, and again, owe Elton a hell of a lot, really.
With his academic career not taking off, Steve Kirby pursues his passion of cricket. Scouted by Leicestershire in his teens after plying his trade in the Lancashire Leagues, in 1994, Steve goes to Grace Road and signs on a YTS scheme for £25 a week. A year later, he gets his first full professional contract. But before he can make his first team debut, he's let go, following a career-threatening back injury. Steve takes a job as a floor salesman, but won't give up his cricket dreams.
You know, I had a lot of soul-searching to do. When you feel like your dream's gone and you think you're going to get, you know, you've got no chance of making it back, you really have to dig deep. And I went and sold floors.
Yeah, was it linoleum?
Yeah, well, it was a bit more than that. It was contract flooring for a company called West Coates Flooring.
Okay,
and
where were they based?
They're based in Broughton Astley, in Leicestershire, and a guy called Carl Nicol, who I again owe a hell of a lot to. He helped me for those few years, and slowly but surely, I was getting myself physically stronger. Started to trial elsewhere. Carl was very, very, very supportive of that.
He owned the business.
Yeah, was doing pretty well.
Was he a cricket fan, or did he just?
No, big sporting fan in a family friend, actually, family uncle of, if you like, of my wife. He was my wife's uncle, he was hugely helpful to me. But it got to the point where we were trialling a lot everywhere and still trying to do my job. And then I was able then to go and trial with Yorkshire.
Mm.
And telling you my whole life story here, Will.
Well, that's the point of the podcast, Curbs.
And it was quite an interesting moment, really, because I wanted it so much. Leicestershire had come back in for me to play. And I remember my father-in-law, Pete, saying, don't go back and play for Leicestershire, you'd be crazy. And I said, no, I'm going to go and play. And it was against Glamorgan. And I let him have it. I got a sixfer. And then I went and trialled the week after for Yorkshire and bowled really well. I had a little purple patch in the second team where I was...
You almost missed your net, though, didn't you? Because you were working down in Surrey.
Yes, right.
And you had a net to trial up in Yorkshire and you almost didn't make it.
That's a great, yeah. I don't know how you found that out, but I did, you're right. Steve Oldham was running the academy nets. And I was caught in so much traffic getting up. I was ringing Esso. I was going, Esso, I'm really struggling. I might not make it here. Just get here when you can, Curbs. Don't you worry. And this was the first time. I'd not even played a game by that point. This was in the winter. And I got there and I just let him have it in this academy. Like, there was some really good players in there as well. Tim Bresnan was part of the academy at the time. And at that point, that was around about March time. And then, as I said, from around about sort of April to May, I was then able then to go and play a game for Leicestershire and then play some second 11 games for Yorkshire. And I never sort of looked back. But the story goes, Will, that I'd got no holiday left whatsoever. Like, literally, I'd trialled everywhere.
Yeah.
And Carl had lost... I started to lose patience with me.
Yeah.
And quite rightly, too, he had a business to run.
So you were using your annual leave to go and net to
and
try
more,
and get back into cricket.
More than annual leave. More than, you know, you only get a certain amount of days a year.
Yeah.
And I was chewing them up, playing cricket.
Okay.
Still trying to place orders for West Coast. But then... And then Carl said to me at one point, you know, because I'd already done well. I'd took a 10-for in a second 11 game, done a 5-for for Leicester, you know, and I'd already played nicely, but I'd got no holiday left. And he said, I remember I was on the phone waiting for an order, big order to come in, and Esso rang me. And he goes, Curbs, we need you to play tomorrow. And I've gone, Esso, I can't, mate. He's gone, you better add. I said, I can't. I've got no holiday left, Esso. And he said, no, you better play because it's the first team. And I've literally almost dropped the phone. I was like, what do you mean? And he said, yeah, he said, and I said, well, the game's already started, day two of a game. You know, they've already started just today. He said, yeah, look, Oggy's been called up for England. If you don't want to play, I'll get someone else, he said. I said, wait there. So put the phone, I said, ring you back in 5 minutes. I went down, I sort of cap in hand to Carl again, and I said, Carl, can I just, I'm desperate to play another game. He said, look, I've had enough here. You've got no holiday left, you're not playing. You either make a decision, that's enough. And I was gutted. And he could tell how gutted I was. And he said, Kerbs, he said, you're going to have to make a decision here. You know that, don't you? They're messing you around. Yorkshire either want you or they don't. And I said, well, it's the first team, Carl. I forgot to tell him. And he'd gone, what, the first team? I said, he said, yeah. I said, well, he said, I'm driving you up there. And he did. He picked me up, put me in the car and drove me all the way up. And, it was unbelievable, mate. It was one of those where you just, you know, I look back on it now, it gets you quite emotional, really.
Yeah.
Because without him, I wouldn't have been able to get where I am, really.
So, on the 6th of June 2001, Carl drives Steve up the motorway in a last-minute dash so he can make his first-class debut a day into Yorkshire, Kent at Headingley. It's a dream start. Steve takes 7 for 50 as Yorkshire win the game by 9 wickets.
I can't really explain what it was like. All the pent-up frustration, all of everything that had built up over a period of a few years there, the coming back off a back injury, being told you're never going to bowl again, coming back, getting a new, building yourself back up with your action, then realising you'd had this journey over time to get the dream again, and then all of a sudden I'd visualised getting Rob Key out. I know the pitch was keeping a little bit low from one end, from the top end, and from the Kirkstall end, and I'd just pictured literally the ball nipping back and just mopping him up, and it happened exactly that way, and I never looked back. And took the odd wicket here and there in that game. And
you took 7 for 50. 7 for 50 and won the match for Yorkshire. I mean, it's kind of Royal the Rovers stuff, this. And you're 24 at the time. Just 7 years earlier, you'd been released. You say that when you were sort of 17, 18, you say you weren't mentally strong enough. I mean, for most people, that would have just knocked them off. They'd have gone and pursued another career. But you had that. Where do you have that mental fortitude to be able to do that?
God, I don't know. Will, when you want something bad enough, when you really, really, really want something, you can achieve anything. And I wasn't going to give in. I wanted to play for England more than anything. And I wanted to be a professional cricketer more than anything. And I'm a great believer that it's not how high you get, it's how low you get and how well you pick yourself back up again. And I wasn't, I can't really explain what it was like. I'd watched all these lads, the lads in that Yorkshire dressing room, they were my heroes. Your Darren Goffs, your Ryan Sidebottoms, your Chris Silverwoods, your Michael Vaughans, Darren, you know, all these people, Darren Lee, you know, and all of a sudden I'm now in the same dressing room as him. And I remember walking into that dressing room with my head down and my bags like me, and I remember thinking, oh my God, I was so nervous. And I remember sitting down at the other end of that dressing room, and every single person came up and shook me by the hand, which I thought was smashing, like amazing. And every one of them said, Tango, we've heard a lot about you. And first time I've been proper called Tango, to be honest. And but you know when you just feel like there was no egos in that team?
Yeah.
And just to get that chance to play in that team and just... was just special, mate. So just to get, I don't know quite what you, where do you sometimes just got to dig down deep, and if you want it bad enough, you get it.
And that season, Yorkshire win the county title, 2001, you're part of that side. Ryan Sidebottom, Craig White, Richard Dawson, Chris Silverwood, Gavin Hamilton, Matthew Hoggard, that's the bowlers, and plus Steve Kirby. And you were the leading wicket taker, and you only started about a third of the way through the season. So does 2001, even though it's kind of your first year as a county player, does it rank for you as one of your, was it the best year summer of cricket for you?
Yes and no. I mean, it was amazing to play with not only your what seemed to be your heroes at the time, but then became really, really good friends. And Yorkshire had never won a championship for 33 years. So to win it that year was... I didn't understand the significance of what we'd achieved until a few years later, to be honest. I remember winning it at Scarborough, and I saw, you know, the place was packed. And I remember Michael Vaughan sitting down with us in the dressing room, and he said, treasure every moment of this. Sign every autograph. Try and remember it, because it'll be gone in a heartbeat. He said, but look at those people out there. Look what you've achieved. And I always remember something that I'll never, ever forget. And it was four games out, and we just got... Well, I think we just got beat, actually. And I think it was a couple of one-day games. And Wayne Clark sat us all down in the dressing room, right? And Wayne Clark was an amazing coach. And he said, right, guys, sort of a bit of a telling off, but he also said, look, I want you to look at each other in the dressing room. And I always remember he said, look to your left. And mine was Ryan Sidebottom to my left. He said, look him in the eye. And we were all like, what the hell is he on about here? You know, this is not right, this. And I remember him having quite an awkward little stare.
And with those curling, flowing locks,
exactly. Side bottom. Like, where's he going with this? And we said, no, seriously, he said, look him in the eye, he said, because in four games' time, you're either going to have something special with him and the other blokes you've got in this dressing room, or you're not. He said, so, you know, you can play for your hundreds, you can play for your fifers, or you can play for that bloke that sat next door to you in the dressing room. It was one of the most powerful things anyone's ever done in a chat. And I remember, he said, because when you're in a bar, when you're 55 or 60, and he said, you've won this championship in four games' time, you're going to have something so special with those people. That's, for me, is more than anything you can do individually. And it was really powerful. And that resonated with me big time. And now, even though we'd won it 2001, and how many years later are we, we have a special bond with every single one of those people in that team. And wherever they are now, quite a lot of them are coaches, actually. Quite a lot of them, I mean, Chris Silverwood's even the England fast bowling coach.
Yeah,
and,
indeed.
You know, so it's a very, very, it was very special, 2001. And you said I took a few wickets that year. It wasn't difficult taking wickets when you got bowlers like that at the other end. It was relentless. They had four main seamers every game, and you know, it was, and Craig White, who was batting in your top five, who bowled speed of light, you know, if some red-headed so-and-so could come on at the other end and just mop up, then I was exceptionally lucky to be bowling in a team like that.
Let's talk a little bit now about Lords. Cheltenham and Gloucester Trophy Final 2002, Yorkshire are there. Was that the first time you came to Lords? Can you remember?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. I had played there before, but not in a first class match. But yeah, the story there goes, I was living with Chris Silverwood, right, who's one of my bestest mates in cricket, full stop. And he basically had been bowling pretty much half the season with two pieces of bone floating around in his ankle. And I knew how much pain he was in, but he weren't missing this game. And I'd been told about 10 days before, you're playing, Kerbs, you're playing. And I'm like, I don't think I am. So basically, Silvers was struggling. And that morning of the game, I'd prepared as if I was playing.
Yeah, it was against Somerset, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. 2002, yeah.
And I prepared as if I was playing well. And Silvers had gone off and got a couple of these big injections in his ankle. And I'm thinking, God, there's about 45 minutes here before we start a play. I thought, I'm in here, I'm playing. And then, literally, like Lazarus, he came dancing down, dancing the steps. And I was caught between two emotions, really. Massively gutted and disappointed I weren't playing in this final, but also really happy that one of your best mates was still going to get a chance to play. So, really caught between the two. Anyway, we won the game. It didn't matter. I think there's a picture there where you see me absolutely going bananas on a
yeah, there you are.
The balcony. That was one hell of a party, I can tell you that.
You were much more ginger then.
Yeah, I know.
Your hair's faded over the years.
Well, you know, a lot of people go grey. I think I've...
What I love about this photo is it's the 2002 C&G final, and on the balcony, is that Gavin Hamilton with a with an old school camcorder? No camera phones or anything.
Have a quick look
on the left.
No, that's... Is it Gav?
Oh, it's somebody.
Yeah, it is Gavin Hamilton. Yeah, it is.
He's got like an old school, camcorder, the sort of... They used to do like kids' parties with when you were a kid growing up, you know, those weary ones.
There was a bin on the left hand side of that picture, right? Yeah. That we dressed up like R2-D2. Star Wars. And there was, anyway, it's a running joke in the dressing room. It's probably not going to make any sense here whatsoever, but he followed us everywhere, this bin. We made a bin everywhere we went in every game.
Well, so every match you went to, if there was a bin, you dressed it up as R2-D2?
Dressed it up and give it this one, bar, bar, like this. And it's not going to make any sense to anybody now, but he sort of was our little mascot in the dressing room. And he held us in good stead. I tell you, the innings, that game of Matt Elliott got 150-odd, and Anthony McGrath got, I think, 90-ish, I think. And we chased down a hell of a target on a pretty good pitch.
It was Somerset 2-5-6 for 8. Mm. And then let's just check who got the wickets. Well, 5 for from Hoggard. Silverwood didn't get wickets, so maybe you should have played, Kerbs.
I think you were pretty economical.
It was very economical. 8 overs, 1 maiden, 0 for 30. So, Somerset set 257 to win. And it was Matt Elliott, the Australian overseas, 128 not out.
Did he?
With the 2 overs to spare. Yorkshire won by 6 wickets in the end. Fantastic effort. I just want to ask one question. Mm. You'll know the answer. Mm. Why was Chris Silverwood batting at number 3?
Cool. Did he go in as a pinch hitter? Did he score any runs in that game?
He got a duck. He batted at 3 and faced 3 balls and was bowled by Richard Johnson.
I think he was at that point in that campaign.
Yeah,
he'd gone in and he was seen as like a bit of a pinch hitter, and we were going to see if we could get above the rate quite quickly. Obviously, about 5, didn't get many, but God bless him.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for, but you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
But the celebrations at Lords are short-lived. Yorkshire are relegated to Division 2 of the County Championship just a year after winning the title. But things are going well for Steve. In 2003, he takes 67 wickets in the season. The reward? A call-up for the England A side.
We went to India. It was such a shock to the system. I remember going up, first game out in India. This is a good story. I went out, and we're playing at Amritsar, and we're playing against India A. and my first ball of a four-day game. Bearing in mind the pitch was relatively green in India, which is very unheard of at that time. It was North India, right on the sort of border. Some bloke hit me for the first ball of a four-day game over extra cover for six, right? And my first over went for 24, and we got this poke out in the fourth over, and he got 47. And you know who it was?
When was this? 2003-04.
Yeah.
Virender Sehwag?
MS Dhoni. He absolutely belted me everywhere. Yeah, so that was my first sort of, oh my God, I'm in India and I'm coming up against these people. So, yeah, loved it. Absolutely loved being part of that. There's some great stories in India, which I could tell you all about, maybe not on a podcast, but...
was there part of you that when you were out there and, okay, not wasn't great fun being hit by MS Dhoni for six over extra cover, but... sort of, was it a pinch yourself moment? You think, wait a minute, you know,
yeah.
two, three years ago, I was a floor salesman. Now I'm touring with an England A side in the most cricket mad country in the world, India. You know, that must have been a special or
hugely special. Well, I mean, yeah, definitely pinch your moment because that's exactly what it was. It was surreal, and you had to, and I never ever lost sight of where I'd come from. Never, all the way through my career.
Do you think that's grounded you as a player?
Without doubt. Without doubt. And then, obviously, coming into coaching now, I think it's hugely important that players have a level of adversity in their life. Not horrendous, but some level of adversity, because it does ground you and it does give you a real appreciation of what you've got. And, yeah, obviously, going out to India, that was quite a... I can't tell you honestly. There was some brilliant story. That was the tour that KP got 500s in five innings before he'd even got anywhere near the England side. He's playing England A, and it was five innings. He got 500s consecutively, and look what happened to him.
How did you find KP in the dressing room? I mean, we know the stories of KP, but what was your impressions of him? How was he?
Good man.
Yeah.
Nice fella. Bit of a lone wolf. What a match winner. Worked harder than I've ever seen anyone work on a cricket. I was really gutted, actually, watching his sort of falling away from the England side. And I was more disappointed, really, with, you know, I've got to be careful what I say, but more disappointed, really, with England management, not understanding him as a person. I believe you've got to understand what drives and motivates people. He's a match winner.
Mm.
Yeah, granted, he probably, to his own admission, maybe would have dealt with things in a slightly different way at times, which, you know, you can't ever sort of, you know, but people do things in the heat of the moment, don't they? But I always found him top class.
Yeah.
I always found him a great bloke to have around. He was the bloke you'd want in the trenches with you.
Yeah.
Because he'd always come out fighting. Hell of a player. Didn't enjoy bowling at him, I could tell you that.
Did he ever give you any batting tips? Because I've read stories that he would coach the youngsters or help out with their batting. Was there ever a Peterson on Kirby session?
Well, I think he had one session with us and went, look, I can't polish a what's it here. You know what I mean?
There's only so much I can do.
I've got to get rid of this fella. No, he did help me once, but, you know, it was once.
So by 2004, your Yorkshire career comes to an end and you move to Gloucestershire for 5 years.
Yeah.
Quite soon after signing for them, you were done for ball tampering in June 2005.
Oh, yeah.
You were accused and found guilty of altering the condition of the ball after it was hit into a car park in Cardiff during a game against Glamorgan.
Yeah.
You were accused of basically rolling it across the car park to scuff it up.
I didn't roll it across a car park. I did a lot more than that. it's not really what you want. Look, I tell you what it was. I'd learned how to reverse swing a cricket ball when we were out in India. And Elliot was playing for Glamorgan at the time and smacking it everywhere. Yeah. And we were chasing leather pretty much for a day and a bit, right? And Ian Fisher were bowling. Left arm spin, spinning it into him. And he just kept lap slogging this ball on regular occurrence out of the ground at what was the old Sophia Gardens.
Mm.
So before the new ground had obviously been built. So it kept getting whacked over. And I thought, if that ball gets hit out of the ground again, I'm going after that. So I did. Went literally legging it after the ball. And our 12th man was a guy called James Avery. And I'm smiling now. Please forgive me. I'm smiling because the ball got hit into the opposite car park, the university bit, the car park at the back. And I shouted to Avery, throw it at me, throw it at me. So I let it bounce along the floor about three times, this cricket ball. And I let it hit me. And I thought to myself, I've got to try and see what the ball, colour of this ball, you know, condition of this ball's like. And it was right next, right at the back of the pavilion. And stupidly, I just scragged it along the cricket, on the floor, right? Almost lost half an hemisphere of the ball, right? And I looked up and there was this security guard looking straight at me. And I've gone, oh no. Anyway, he was a bit shocked. James Avery was a bit shocked at what I'd done. A stupid thing I'd done, right? And I threw this ball onto the pitch. And God rest his soul, John Hampshire, who's now not with us, he looked at the ball, he looked at it, and he said, "No, wrong with that, carry on." At which point, now the ball starts going round corners, right? I couldn't bowl with the ball, he didn't even put me on. So my little escapade didn't even work because I couldn't even use the ball that we were now swinging the ball around. But I remember John Derrick, who again, God rest his soul, what a lovely man. He was actually, he was watching me do this. He'd stuck his head out of the dressing room at the back and he'd see, anyway, he came running onto the pitch in the middle of a first class match and he's like, "That Kirby's a cheat." And I clearly had. I had cheated and I was so gutted about what I'd done.
John Derrick was at Glamorgan.
He was coach of Glamorgan at the time.
Right.
And anyway, cut long story short, we had a hearing. And one of the funniest moments of that hearing, Tim Munton was in there, a guy called Mr. Gabitas. And we had to do like a conference call with as a witness. And James Avis was the witness. And I'm laughing because I don't know if you've ever seen The Fast Show. Have you ever seen The Fast Show?
Bits of it, yeah.
There used to be a scene on it, right? And he said, "Mr. Avis," he said, "can you explain your comment, please? when Stephen allegedly, Mr. Kirby allegedly scragged this ball on the concrete floor, you was here to say to the security guard, you haven't seen me, or Lloyd." At which point now everyone's trying not to smile in this very serious hearing.
Yeah.
And he said, "You haven't seen The Fast Show, have you guys?" He said, because, you know, it was more of a joke really rather than a... Anyway, cut long story short, I got the book thrown at me for that and wasn't one of my proudest moments, Will, but...
No.
Funny.
It happens. You were doing well at Gloucestershire. In 2009, you took 64 wickets at 22.18. So, but then you moved to Somerset. We'll move on to that now. You know, you come to Somerset in 2011 to 14.
Yeah.
What was the reason for the move? Was it Gloucestershire were playing Div 2 cricket and you wanted to be back in Division 1? Or was it just time for a change? Or were you haunted by your ball tampering?
No, definitely not. Look, I had some amazing times at Gloucestershire.
Yeah.
I was awarded a benefit year. I'd signed a 3-year contract. And I was looking round at my career at that moment in time. I was taking wickets. I was bowling well. We tried to get up into the first division, but we couldn't. Missed out narrowly on a few occasions. And I just thought, look, I don't want any regrets at the end of my career. So I, you know... With a heavy heart, actually said, "Look, I want to move, but I want to move to a first division club. I didn't want to move too far away," and I actually turned down the benefit year. So that was, you know, financially probably a suicidal thing to do, but like I said, I wanted to play for England, and at that point I took a lot of wickets and I wasn't making it. And as it happens, I made another tour. We got to a couple of finals. By moving to Somerset, I then ended up in the Champions League in India again. which, you know, so I look back on it now. Yeah, maybe I lost a few quid in out of a benefit year, and maybe I upset a couple of people by actually moving to the enemy from Gloucestershire. Yeah. But I hope people understood at the time my reasons for doing it. It wasn't at any stage at all a thing that was... a detrimental thing to Gloucestershire. It was simply the fact I wanted to play for England so desperately that at the end of my career, if I'd have had any regrets, I would have hated myself. And now I don't have any regrets whatsoever. I gave it everything I had.
because you clearly still felt that you could play for England at the time. You didn't feel that that ship had sailed.
No, I was only 30.
Yeah. You say only 30, but these days, you know, in for modern cricket, that's it's getting on a bit for a quick bowler. You've only got a few years left and you haven't quite made the cut.
Yeah, no, true. Of course it is. But look, I mean, at the end of the day, if I'd have took that benefit year, I'd have been 32. What would I have done then? Took a few quid. I'd, you know, been, yeah, that's fine and wonderful. And I was very appreciative of everybody's support and want to help me there. And I was hugely honoured to get that. I really was. But, you know, ultimately, what do we play this game for? We play this game to be the very best you could possibly be and to give it everything you've ever got. And not, I look now in my coaching, I'm looking for a challenge seeker. I'm looking for a challenge hunter. I'm looking for somebody who is a hungry, humble learner. While I'd still had a lot of learning to do. Still, I've got a lot of learning to do. And, you know, I could not have been true to my values, true to what I stand by, if I'd have took that benefit year and just sat there and took mediocrity. I wanted to challenge myself. I went to an amazing county with some amazing players, bowled on a very flat pitch. I was 6'3" when I went there, you know. I'm now about 5'9". Bowling on the M5 motorway is not what you want. But no, look, I have no regrets. No regrets. I loved every moment that I was at Somerset.
Let's talk about one of those memories. When you're at Somerset, I think it was at Lord's that this incident happened. you were playing in a game against Sussex and you got pinned. Tell me about that.
Well, it was one of several occasions I got pinned, Will. as I said to you earlier, I used to go through more helmets than bats, actually. My bat sponsor at the time was Miller Champion Hall. I think I had one bat that lasted me 2 years. I was his best person. Rob Chambers, who's one of my closest friends now. he used to go, like I said, he used to be like, how many helmets do you want? The shear curves, you know what I mean? This one was a bad one. Really bad. Champions county game against Sussex. Ryan Harris was playing for Sussex, bowling very quickly. I can honestly say he didn't hit me, thank God. Otherwise, he was bowling very quick. I remember bowling very well in the first innings. England had selected that game, so I was on the cusp of playing. I took a fourfer, I think. It was coming into, I think I went night watchman. It was a night watchman scenario. Luke Wright's bowling from the pavilion end. Pitch is slightly sloping down the hill, as you know.
Yeah.
And he bounced me the first one. And I thought, well, if it's going down the hill, I'll go the other way.
Just duck inside it.
Get inside. Anyway, this thing sort of went up the hill and clanged me on the side of the helmet, right? Anyway, my pieces of my helmet are floating around everywhere. So I was like, oh my. Anyway, got a new helmet on. About two or three balls later, he had a very naughty bouncer on him, Luke Wright, and a great bloke as well. Anyway, the next one sort of did jack back down the hill, but I then sort of backed away and I turned my head away and this thing hit me around the back of the ear. And I mean, the pictures of it now, if you can ever watch it, it was horrendous. And I literally knocked me clean out on the pitch. I've gone down on the floor and there was a genuine alert of concern. I was out for a while. And I always remember waking up to Matt Pryor's face right in front of me, almost trying to give me the kiss of life. He had the breath of 1,000 camels, honestly. He was like, best, God bless him, Matt. But anyway, I came round, and because it hit me on the back of the ear, I'd got genuine balance problem. So I was like, I'm all right, I can get back up. So I got back up, and I'm wobbling everywhere, Will, honestly. So anyway, I clearly couldn't carry on. And I said, well, you're not getting a stretcher on. I'm not getting carted off Lords. That's going to be the most embarrassing thing if on a stretcher. So I walked off in a bad way. And I eventually got off and I got up the steps, went through the long room. And the long room was pretty packed. And I was like, I'm going here. I'm going to go again. And I thought, I can't just black out in the middle of the long room at Lord's. So I had somehow got up onto the first set of staircases. You know the road, you know the route I'm telling you. And we're going up to the away home dressing room, sorry. And I think I got halfway up, about six steps up the staircase, and I woke up in hospital.
Oh dear.
It was a horrendous one, yeah. It was bad. But I used to go, like I said, I used to get hit quite a lot.
When the captain would say, Kirby, you're on night watchman duty. Because now you always, you know, whenever players now in front of the media, they get asked, you know, are you happy to be night watchman? They sort of give the, yeah, anything for the team, happy to... You didn't really think that, did you? Oh, for God's sake. Again.
Well, England, you bear in mind that game, England had picked the team, yeah?
Yeah.
What was I going to turn around? I didn't want to face Ryan Harris bowling 94 mile an hour. You know, you want to be... I thought, no, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, but you're not in there for your batting.
Clearly.
That's my point. No, yeah. Does anyone really want to do night watchman?
No, you don't. No, you don't. And there was another night watchman story at Scarborough.
Yeah.
Matthew Wood, who was opening batter for Yorkshire. He is a serious player. Serious player. Had a hell of a year that year, 2001. And he got 1,000 runs. Anyway, Simon Jones is bowling at him. And he bounced him. Jonah was bowling very quick. And he let him have one, and he sort of got through this hook shot, but totally mistimed it. And it went straight through and hit him on the eye.
Oh
God, there's claret everywhere. And it was terrible. I'm going in that watchman next. And I remember him being carted off this pitch. And, oh my Lord, I was padded up to the nines. I was, Simon Jones, it's a bit murky. There's a bit of a fret going on at, sea fret going on at Scarborough. And I remember literally going down there, looking down the pitch, and I'm facing Simon Jones bowling the speed of light, right? I'm looking down at the pitch, there's a big pool of claret on the pitch. Like, this is not me.
What have I signed up for?
Exactly.
In 2011, Steve walks out for Somerset in the Clydesdale Bank 40 final against Surrey. Here at Lords, they bat first, and a young Joss Butler smashes 86 to take Somerset from 79 for 5 to 214 all out and give them a fighting chance.
Too easy. Up and over. Has it gone all the way? I think it has. That's away for 4. And 50 for Joss Butler. Been an uphill struggle for Somerset this innings, but this is a superb knock from this young man.
What an amazing cricketer Joss Butler is.
Yeah.
Right. I feel so privileged that I've had a chance to play cricket with somebody as talented and as a great a bloke as he is. Let me tell you, he's probably 19, 20 at the time in this game. This told me at that time what a special cricketer he is, because I'm going in last, right? Now, I'm a cricketer that's played quite a few games at that point. Obviously, with my prowess with the bat, I'm going in number 11, you know what I mean? But we're in the car. We're in the car in a big, big way. And he took control. He took control of my nerves. He took control of... He gave me a very clear game plan. Arafat was bowling very quick. He said he's either going to knock you on the head, Kerbs, or he's going to blow your toe off. I was like, brilliant, thanks Jaeger. You know, we called him Jaeger at the time, Josh. I said, cheers, Josh. And he anyway, he goes, now listen, what I want you to do, I want you to get your head out of the way, and I want you to get your front foot out of the way. I've got 5 balls to block. He said, I'm not asking you to score anything, because I'm going to take Durham back down at the other end. He said, and all I'm going to ask you to do is just survive these 5 balls, right? So I'm fine, I got my front foot out of the way. I knew exactly what he was trying to do. He tried to knock my head off twice, and he tried to yoke me. I got out of there, and he absolutely marmalised Jed Dernbach, taking his slow balls, getting deep in the crease, and just hitting him over deep mid-wicket.
Goes big. Has he gone big enough? Yes, just. Brilliant effort in the deep.
And we all know what type of cricketer he is now, don't we?
Mm.
What a special, special player. And we're very lucky to have a player like that. But it was very clear to me, his clarity under pressure, his ability to be clear in difficult circumstances, very difficult, get us up to a total where we were competitive.
Yeah.
And, you know, watching the way he goes about his business in practice and everything, it's no surprise to me he's gone as far as he has. and will carry on doing so. He's going to be a special player.
Oh, gone this time. I think it's Murali Kartik again. It is. He put one down in the first over, but he's made no mistake from a slightly deeper position this time, and that's a wicket that Somerset badly needed.
Going back to that game, wow. I mean, yeah, we were on 35 for two. Got Steve Davis out. I think we got Jason Roy out quite quick.
Yeah,
nicked him off.
Caught behind. And then it was Rory Hamilton-Brown that sort of hit the match-winning innings of 78. But, you know, Nick Compton misses a run-out chance on 116 for three.
Yeah,
and he's trying to run out Hamilton-Brown, which would put them four down and still needing 90-odd to win. Mm. You know, it's moments like that where on the pitch, you need everything to go right for you.
Oh, after scamper, Hamilton-Brown would have gone with a direct hit. I'm sure of that.
And it's very tight, and Hamilton-Brown miles out of his ground.
You know, if we'd have put a 240 score on, which was very capable of, that game would have been completely different. But, you know, sometimes you look back on those situations, and yeah, I mean, it's not a nice feeling. Not a nice feeling walking into a final and coming out on the wrong side of it.
That'll do nicely. It's through, down to the boundary. Spriegel punches the air. And Surrey Lions win the Clydesdale Bank 40 in some style too. It's absolutely sickening disappointment for Somerset, but not for these boys. The Lions are out of their cage.
What's the dressing room like at Lord's after that defeat? I mean, just to sort of compare it to 2002, you've got a dustbin dressed as R2-D2 and you're all having a party.
Yeah.
It must be completely different then.
Yeah, it is. It is. But, you know, I think at that particular time, Andy Herry was brilliant. Jason Kerr was brilliant. It's no surprise to me that Somerset are going to do as well as they are doing now with those two people at the helm. They were really, really, really pragmatic. They'd given us a great speech. Yes, of course, people are down. People are upset. People don't want to lose. You know, no one ever means to lose. But we had to pick ourselves up really quick. You know, we're on our way to the Champions League.
Mm.
You know, we had to qualify for that for a start. We had to go and play two games out in India. And we only had a day before we were on the plane. So it was a case of, yeah, you know, let's pick ourselves up. Let's learn from those mistakes. You'll get to this point again many, many times. Some of those players in the dressing room now, you know, that were there then, look at them. They're playing for Somerset now. And there's some great cricketers in that dressing room. And what did we do? We went on to the Champions League and we finished last four in the world. You know, and that was a true testament to the management team, to the players, and the way that we picked ourselves up. We were underdogs when we went out to India. And we flew the flag really, really high and did brilliantly. So, yeah, it was. Yeah, people were down, people were upset, people were gutted. You'll bounce back.
Let's talk about retirement now. You make the decision a couple of seasons later. You call it a day on your playing career. How hard was that?
Tough. Toughest thing I've ever had to do. Look, I mean, I had a real problem with my shoulder at the time, Will. I mean, I had to have a shoulder operation. I had to get back from that. I'd still got 2 years left on my contract. I could have kept going, maybe, but the consultant said, look, Steve, and what was happening was, after I got back off to this shoulder op, my shoulder was just getting very unstable every time I bowled. And I thought I was getting there, I really did. And then I went playing in a second team game and I went to throw a ball in and stupidly trying to run somebody out from long off, which I've never done in my career. And the next thing we know, it's shoulders everywhere. But yeah, very tough. Probably the hardest thing a cricketer has to cope with is being told you're not going to be able to ever play again. I'd already been there so many years before. I was lucky that I got as far as I got. But then, you know, I call it the fall, right? You're at this high level in your career, and then all of a sudden you hit rock bottom. and your self-esteem goes, you the transition out of cricket into another part of your life, what you're going to do, how you're going to do it, you have to dig deep again. You really do, and it's not an easy thing to sort of get your head around, but you have to. And all I and so when I was able to take this job on with the MCC, I had such affinity and sort of sympathy and help with these players, because I knew where they'd been, I knew where they were, and I know my only advice to any player while you're still playing is get someone to fall back to while she's still playing, because while she still have that opportunity, you it's a lot easier to do it then. And also it'll help you go into your cricket with a lot less fear and a lot more chance to go and express yourself. I had a sort of exit strategy, but there's another 2 or 3 years on from that. And I went and went into recruitment. I went to a company called Michael Page, who I owe a lot to, very thankful for. But you know, if I'd have had my time again, I probably would have had something a little bit more substantial to go back into at the end of my career. And it's tough, mate. It is tough, and it sounds like I'm getting down about it. I'm not down. Look, at the end of the day, sport's about bouncing back. I've done that all the way through my career, and this was another occasion of that. Then going into being into recruitment, but then actually getting a chance to take a job on like this with MCC for a few years, I that was amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Let's finish on that then. So you retire in 2013-14. That's your cricket career done.
Yep.
Well, almost mirroring your sort of your earlier life, you go into another profession, you go into recruitment.
Yeah.
And then 2 years later, 2016, you become the Marylebone Cricket Club head coach based at Lords.
Yeah.
You spend three seasons as the head coach with the young cricketers. Just in a nutshell, I mean, what is that programme and how were those 3 years for you?
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Very grateful to the club for giving me that opportunity. I think I was more shocked than them when I got the role. But no, I mean, look, it's a finishing school for a late developer. It's a support network for counties. It's not seen as talent development. It's seen as talent confirmation. And then one of the things I did when I first arrived in the programme was change the age group, change what it was needing to do, and that is to help counties talent confirm a player that gets out of the academy and is either blocked from financial or lack of opportunity, or you know, just a chance where they've just maybe not quite got those two facets of the game that they need.
Yeah.
So you partner with a county, they fund some of it into the program, and then hopefully you get one of these guys over the line and back into county cricket. That's the plan. But there's also another part to the program, and that is to help international countries as well, which I'm very proud of to have set up and helped. ICC needs help there with high-performing countries, and we do that. We've helped Ireland, Scotland, New Zealand. We have a wonderful partnership with. I say we. I'm still a massive MCC member.
And the heart's there. And a member, yeah, of course.
You know, and I'm very, very proud of what we did for 3 years. I think we got 11 or 12 contracts out of 2.5 years. And the programme's got 287 players have come through that programme since 2003, you know. And 63 have gone on to first-class contracts. 32 have played A tours, and 26 have played international cricket for Test cricket. And there were 8 international captains through that programme. It's one of the best things MCC ever does. Hugely proud to say I was part of that. Mm. Hugely proud that MCC does what it does for cricket. And was an amazing grounding for Steve Kirby to try and move on from there. And I wish all the very, very best to the next person that's coming in. But now I'm at Derby.
Yeah. And so that's the beginning of a new chapter.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just going to finish, Kirby, with asking you, sort of sitting here now, how do you look back on your career?
With a lot of pride. A lot of happy memories, no regrets at all, none whatsoever. Maybe I could have regretted the odd thing I've done here and there on the cricket field, but you know, I've made some special friends through cricket, and yeah, I mean, look, we've won some trophies. It's given me a great grounding to go into cricket now as a coach. The best coaches I've ever experienced are the ones that care about their players.
And Fabs, Paul Fabridge, gave me some great advice, and it shaped my coaching philosophy moving forward here. They won't always remember what we say. You won't always remember what we do, but you'll always remember how we've made them feel. And the best coaches I've ever experienced are the ones that make you feel brilliant. So moving forward now into coaching, that's what I want to do. I want to make sure my players feel fantastic, amazing. Not always the case. I want to support them. I want to help them. I'm very honest. I'm very straight. And I will I have my players' backs. It's simple as that. And going back to as a player, what do I remember the most? Winning with my mates. And that's it.
And that little boy at Haywood Cricket Club playing tip and run, would he ever have dreamt that it turned out like this?
No, certainly not. And I don't think they would have done either, to be honest. I'm very, very appreciative of the people that have helped me through my cricket career. And you never forget who they are. Haywood, Kidworth Cricket Club. You know, I'm going to miss people here, but, you know... Carl helped me at West Coates massively, Leicestershire, some special people there, and then moving, like I said, you know, all the way through your career, you don't forget those people and you make some great mates, don't you?
Steve Kirby, thank you very much for your time today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
No worries. Thanks, Will. Thanks for inviting me on.
You've been listening to the Lords Cricket Podcast, the stories from the home of cricket with the people that made them. That was Steve Kirby. That was great to sit down with Steve Kirby there. A real pleasure. As I sort of talked about during the podcast, he didn't make it for England. You know, you'd expect on the Lords Cricket Podcast, you know, it's about people that get, you know, five for get on the honours board, hundreds, those honours board moments. But there's so much more to the game than that. You know, there's the county levels, there's the league cricket, you know, Steve talking about his time playing for Haywood CC and those memories of Kirtley Ambrose. I mean, it's just fantastic. And he's just quite simply a great bloke. As I think you probably heard from that, the adversity he went through, you know, at the age of sort of 17, 18, to be let go, back injury, you're never playing cricket again. Selling floors, and at the same time, you know, busting his guts, you know, playing, you know, minor county stuff, trialing here, there, chewing up all his annual leave and more. It's a really wonderful story, and he's also a great storyteller. So it was great fun to sit down with Steve, and yeah, a big thanks to Curbs for taking the time to record the podcast. Thanks as ever to the ECB and Sky for those commentary clips in this week's show. Remember, do get in touch with the show on Twitter. It's at Homer Cricket, that's the handle, or me personally at Will Rowe 2. You can also email the show on podcast@mcc.org.uk, and also leave a review and give us a rating. Get us up those charts, and so more people can hear the podcast and spread the message. Right, next week's guest on the podcast is Angus Fraser, a true workhorse of a bowler. In many ways, his associations with Lord's Cricket Ground are just endless. From his playing days with Middlesex in England to his post-playing career, he's now the managing director of Middlesex Cricket, also his associations with MCC. Lords is basically Gus's second home, really. It was fascinating to listen to his memories of his career. He really was in that stage where the game went from, you know, more kind of amateur attitude to professionalism during the late 80s and 90s. And he only played 46 tests, which for me is amazing to think, really. I thought my memories as a child, as a teenager, was that Gus Fraser played a lot more cricket for England. And he was badly treated, selections, also injuries as well. So yeah, so that's Gus Fraser. It's a really good listen. I hope you do give it a listen. That's next week's Lords Cricket Podcast with Angus Fraser.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.